We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Friday, you know what that means. We're talking women's hoops, but what you didn't know is that we've rebranded, baby. The postseason means we've got to step up our game a little bit. So, folks, welcome to the first Gower Hour. Megan Gower and Rob Joyce, presented by the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. An exciting new era for our little show. No changes. You can still find us in the same places, just a fancy new name. And if you look at the episode artwork, a fancy new logo. Also different, at least today. Little inside baseball. We record this normally Fridays at 9 a.m. I'm usually in my cozy little office. Megan's normally at home. I think Megan's home, but it's 8 a.m. right now. I'm trying not to scream in a hotel room in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm covering the SEC Women's Basketball Tournament. I apologize to the person on the other side of this wall I'm staring at. Megan, I just learned, did not pull an all-nighter because UCLA and Utah tipped off after 11:30, so I'm a little disappointed, Megan.
I know. I had a hard time making that decision, but I figured I probably should not be asleep by the time I start my day job today.
It's March. Come on, we don't sleep.
Yeah.
So I'm staying in a nice hotel. One side has a view of, like, it's a grand lobby. You can see all, like, seven stories. There's a fountain. I am staring at the roof of what I've gathered as a ballroom and then a parking garage. So I did not get the nice view. My laptop cord is also sitting courtside at Bonds Decor Wellness Arena, where I left it when I walked out at 10:45 last night. So let's get weird. You're carrying us today. I haven't watched 1 second of any non-SEC tournament. I have, meanwhile, seen every second of all six games of the SEC tournament. So where do you want to start? You want to start out in Vegas? Because Pac-12 yesterday got weird. Game one, double overtime, Oregon State, Colorado.
Yeah, that was a great game. And anyone from my day job listens, no, I was not watching the game at 2 p.m. or whatever time it's
No.
Definitely not. But yeah, no, that was, I think, the highlight. I mean, the whole slate yesterday for the Pac-12 was great, but I think that one was the highlight. You kind of thought going into the fourth quarter that, you know, Colorado might close it out. They were up, I think, 11 at some point in the fourth quarter, but Oregon State goes on a run and then double overtime for Oregon State to finish it off.
Yeah, big win for Oregon State, and I think it was important that Reagan Beers, you know, we questioned how would she look. She came back last week, I know that, but 27 points, 12 of 17, 13 rebounds, you know, even more so than picking up the win. I think it was important that Oregon State looked like the Oregon State of, what, a month ago or a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I agree. And I was also really impressed with how their freshmen stepped up down the stretch. I think it was at the end of regulation. It was one of their freshmen that hit a big three to kind of put them in the position to go to overtime. And then at the end of, I think, the first overtime, another freshman hit a big three. So their freshmen were really able to kind of step up in that postseason environment and carry them to that win as well.
What do you make of Colorado now? I mean, they tumbled from the reveal, the one seed down to a three seed. Their only wins since that initial bracket reveal 6-point win against Washington, and they destroyed Oregon a couple of days ago, who finished in last place, finished with 14 straight losses. And meanwhile, they've lost every game, every meaningful game since that initial reveal. So what are your takeaways now from the Buffs, who just seems they can't beat the top teams?
Yeah, they've really tumbled since that first reveal where they were on that one line. I think they were just like the top 4 seed in the last one, and quite frankly, it depends what everyone else does, but like they're now in a position where after losing yesterday, whether or not they'll host the first 2 rounds is in question at this point. That Washington State loss last weekend certainly doesn't help them in that conversation. I think they still have a chance to host, kind of slip into that last 4 seed spot. They've, you know, the teams kind of below there could also lose, so that could push them back in. But they've really, really struggled over the last 3 weeks since that first seed reveal. And this is not the time of year you want to be struggling. You want to be playing your best basketball in March.
Yeah, exactly. The other games in Vegas yesterday, Stanford overcame a halftime deficit. Cameron Brink had 3 fouls at halftime. They were trailing Cal, come back to win by 14. Arizona, another missed opportunity against USC, fell behind early, fell by 3, 65-62. So from a bubble standpoint, is Cal off of it now? And then what does it do for Arizona, who now they're 17-15? That record isn't good, despite the metrics liking them a little bit more.
Yeah, I think Cal is officially out at this point. Arizona, I think, is a tough case because, like you said, 17-15, not great. They've kind of come on strong as of lately, though, so I think that helped them a little bit, and that they've been successful recently, and that seems to be something the committee has kind of prioritized in the what we've seen in the seed reveals, like recent success we saw with Oklahoma making it into the top 16. In the last one, we also saw in the way that Colorado very quickly tumbled in the last one. So recent results matter. So I think that helped Arizona, that they've been stronger in the last month or so. For me, I think I would like to see them in the tournament, right? Like, you've now beat Stanford, played USC to double overtime, and then played USC to the final one possession game in the final minute. Right. Twice in 1 week, like, despite the fact that they lost, like, eye test wise, I'm like, that's a tournament team, right? You're taking 2 that are widely considered top 10 teams down to the wire, beating one of them. Yes, they didn't have Brink, but it's still a win. Like, that's an 11 seed that could win a game. I think I would like to see them in.
Would you rather see them in over, say, Washington State, a team who was one and done with a very disappointing effort against Cal back on Wednesday, a 19-point loss? They only scored 44 points. And, you know, I understand they lost their best player to a torn ACL. So what are you going to do with that? But it just seems Washington State is in a free fall, that, you know, they were so safe when Ledger Walker went down, and now it looks like they might be on the outside.
Yeah, I think I would rather see them in, because, like, part of it has to come down to, like, who's actually going to compete in this event, right? Like, you want good games. And
you'd rather see Arizona.
I'd rather see Arizona. I think the Washington State case is also hard, though, because it's like, if their resume is good enough, like, they, which I think is questionable at this point, if their resume is good enough, but, like, you shouldn't consider injuries and who gets in and out. It's only should be considered in seeding. But I think at this point, they've lost enough games that it's fair to say, like, their resume is just not good enough to get in.
Sure. And there's that human element, too, of course, that.
Right.
Exists because, well, for now, humans do it until the robots take over the world. Speaking of injuries, this is probably where we should have started. None of these teams have yet played this week. We will see them all, I think, today. Iowa, Indiana, and Virginia Tech. But we got to talk some of these injuries from Sunday.
Yeah.
We'll go, I guess, reverse chronological order, because the biggest one, and the one that we don't know, we don't really know, well, I guess we know Miley Davis, but Elizabeth Kittley goes down on her left knee in the third quarter against Virginia on Sunday. Crumples, leaves the game. She returned to the bench. She had a nasty looking bruise. Kenny Brooks was emotional post game. She is in Greensboro. She sat with the team as they watched whatever game they were watching yesterday. I haven't seen an official update. She's probably listed as day to day, but, you know, we're not going to hear anything unless she plays. It's going to be the Olivia Miles thing, where she's day to day. And hey, look, it's been a year and Olivia Miles still hasn't played. So I guess it's a lot of day to days.
Yeah, agreed. It didn't look good. like, you never want to speculate, but just non-contact knee injuries like that, I feel like it's hardly ever good news, unfortunately. Yeah, it didn't look good, and obviously this is a huge blow for Virginia Tech. I mean, so much of what that team does is Kitley. I mean, it's Kitley and Amor, but it's Kitley, and if they don't have her, right, like, they're just an entirely different team. I think Notre Dame did well, all things considered, without Miles last year, but I don't know that that's going to be the same case for this Virginia Tech team. I think they're also a team that, like, was kind of surging going into the last reveal and then have tumbled a little bit. They lost at Notre Dame, not a bad loss, but still a loss. And then, I mean, you lose to Virginia. Yes, Kelly got hurt, and obviously there's the emotional impact of that, but, like, you still shouldn't lose to Virginia.
Because you know, so, after that win?
Lost to, like, I forget
who, but Forrest.
Yes, someone they should lose to.
The year with a whopping 7 wins. So, yes, bad loss. Although Virginia did beat 4 ranked teams this year. That was a weird, weird team. Yes, Wake Forest finished 7-25, 2-16 in the ACC. But hey, picked up a dub against Virginia. So from a strictly resume standpoint, even if Kitley is there, does that loss to Virginia knock the Hokies, even if they were to win the whole thing in Greensboro this week, off a potential one line?
Yeah, I think that probably crushed their hopes of a one seed, even if they won the whole thing in Greensboro. I just think it wasn't just – if it was – honestly, the Virginia loss is kind of what does it, but, like, the two back-to-back losses as well doesn't help them. So, yeah, I would say their one seed chances are done for at this point. But we'll see kind of what happens, I guess. Hopefully – I mean, obviously, hopefully Kitley's okay. That's always the hope, but just I don't have a good feeling that we're going to see her in Greensboro.
Allegedly, she was a no-show at practice in Greensboro yesterday, according to the Roanoke Times. That's all I know, based on the Google search I just did. So, I doubt Kitley plays this week, in the hopes that if there's any chance she's going to play, you're going to save her for the tournament. Maybe you don't even see her next weekend and just hope you can scrape by in that second round game and then go from there and give her time to rest. Indiana's Mackenzie Holmes left in the third quarter against Maryland on Sunday with a left knee injury. She didn't return. Indiana, you know, wasn't in play for a one seed, but they're certainly in line to host. Probably still will, barring maybe if they lost today. But again, you know, just as Kitley is so important to Virginia Tech, obviously Holmes, first team All-American last year, All-American again this year, obviously as important to the Hoosiers.
Yeah, exactly. And just like another injury you don't want to see, especially this time of year. Well, I mean, you never want to see them, but like it just sucks at this time of year when you're like riding high and playing your best basketball and then to have a blow like that. I think hers was like at least a contact knee injury, so like maybe she will play this weekend. We'll see, but I don't know. It's like it's so hard to talk about this when there's no like concrete information, like, oh, she could play today and this is like all a waste, and hopefully that's true. But that's a huge blow to them.
You're gonna be shocked when you hear this. Wednesday, Terry Morin told reporters she is day-to-day. Yes. I will say the Big Ten has availability reports in football. They have it in men's basketball. I don't know if they have it across all sports. And like, we don't need to devolve this into, like, obviously gambling is more prevalent, especially in the men's sports, football and men's basketball in particular. Like, and on the other side, I understand you want to protect the privacy of what are technically student athletes. We need to be a little more transparent.
Yeah.
I think, like, I get you're not trying to give your opponent a competitive advantage. Like, who's Indiana playing today? Let's see. Let's find out.
I don't remember either.
I haven't looked.
Michigan.
Okay. Michigan's, what are they preparing for Mackenzie Holmes to play? Probably a little bit.
Yeah.
But like on the Virginia Tech side, if I am whoever Virginia Tech is playing today, Miami, I'm not preparing for Elizabeth Kitley.
No.
I'm preparing, how do you prepare to attack them now that they have a giant Elizabeth Kitley sized hole? So it just, again, everyone's going to do it. No one's going to willingly give information to their star player if they don't have to. I wish a little bit, part of me wishes that they had to at least say, no, she's out this week or whatever.
Right.
One other injury, Iowa's Molly Davis. She hurt her right leg in the second quarter, had to be carried off the floor. She came back out for senior day in a wheelchair. She didn't tear her ACL. Lisa Bluter, a little more transparent than most coaches, saying she had a severe injury to her kneecap. She's undergoing physical therapy. Looks like she's out for the Big Ten tournament. And again, maybe you just try to get away with getting through the first weekend without her. Obviously not a Holmes-Kittley-esque impact, but still certainly if you're Iowa, you're losing a starter, you're not that deep, at least in the big game. So Davis, you know, an important role player.
Right, exactly. It's less significant to what the team does than a Kittley or a Holmes going down. But still, like you said, an important role player on this team. And a team that doesn't have a lot of depth, so taking away from that depth is not great. Obviously, when you think of Iowa and why they're successful, depth isn't really the top item on that list. It's a single player. So this one is less significant in my mind. Like, I wouldn't change where I was seated based on the fact that they don't have Molly Davis for the postseason, if that's the case, which hopefully she'll be back. But if like that was the case, it wouldn't really impact what I thought this team could do. Like, it makes them a little thinner. It takes away a piece that could be important, but it's not as impactful as the other two.
For sure. I do love Molly Davis. She looks...
Yes.
About as unimposing as a Division I college basketball player can look. And she's a baller. Like, she has so much swag. It's great. She's awesome.
I feel like you could say that about multiple Iowa players, like Kate Martin, too. Like, doesn't look that threatening. But
yeah, but Davis, I feel like she looked sweet and nice, and then she'll, like, stab you. It's great. It's awesome. So hopefully she's okay, and hopefully she can return. If not this weekend, then hopefully the NCAA tournament.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Speaking of Iowa, snapped Ohio State's 16-game win streak. If you'd have told me that Ohio State would make double-digit threes on the road, I would have felt good about their chances to win. And they certainly didn't get blown out, but the outcome was really never in doubt in a game that, frankly, I mean, you and I talked about it last week. I take no bearings away from it, from Iowa or from Ohio State losing. Iowa, I don't think, was ever going to lose that game in the last regular season home game for Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when she made that announcement that she's going to the WNBA. Like, this is her home send-off. Yes, they'll play two games at home in a couple of weeks for the NCAA tournament. But yeah, like we said, Iowa was going to win that game. Yeah, it doesn't change my opinion of Ohio State at all. It's not a bad loss. We're going to talk about this a little bit, but I would still pick them to win the Big Ten tournament. Like, I am still sold on Ohio State, despite the loss.
And then a team who's peaking, Notre Dame won its fifth straight, ran away from Louisville in the second half. And by the way, nice job by the Cardinals yesterday, not getting upset by Boston College, because that would have been bad.
Yeah, that was a little dicey for a while there. I was like, It would serve the ACC right, though. Like, it's just usually chaos in that tournament. So would have been an unexpected outcome to see that upset in the first round.
Some bubble teams to pick up some wins over the weekend in the last couple of days. Talk about Washington State. Kansas beat Oklahoma. Are the Jayhawks somewhat safely in?
Yeah, I think so. I think that probably did it for them. That was a big win. Slide them into the field. I forget who they have. If they have to play today, do they play today?
Big 12 is a day off from everybody, so I forget. Yes, they play BYU today.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can't lose that game to say you're safely in. Win that game, and I would say they're safely in.
And then Miami yesterday knocked off North Carolina 60-59. Canes were safely in most of the year. Went through a tough stretch there to close out the regular season. Does that win kind of move them a little bit, give them a little bit of safety as they've now won 3 out of 4?
Yeah, I think so. I had moved them down, I think, to like last four in this past week, but I think that win over UNC is enough to put them a little bit more comfortably in the field. I don't really feel like they're at risk today. Obviously, you get a win over to Virginia Tech, you can write your ticket to the NCAA tournament, you're going to be fine. But even if they lose today, I think they're probably in.
We'll transition into talking about all of these conference tournaments. We'll start with the ACC, but first, our show now presented by the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. Don't miss your chance to be part of women's basketball history. On April 27th, the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame will be hosting its 25th anniversary induction, honoring Simone Augustus, Rita Gayle-Easterling, Taj Williams-Franklin, Maya Moore-Irons, Sue Phillips, Violet Palmer, and Rooney Scovel for their achievements in women's basketball. The ceremony will take place at the Tennessee Theater Saturday, April 27th. Sponsorship packages and individual tickets still available. For more information, visit WBHOF.com. That's WBHOF.com. You can also call 865-633-9000. All right, Megan, let's transition into some of these high major conference tournaments. We get to cheat a little bit because we're going to pick winners, and most of them are all underway. So we're starting with the quarterfinal round, which, in fairness, our winners would have come from there anyway. ACC, a four-pack of games today starting at 11. You have Notre Dame-Louisville. That's a rematch of Sunday. The Irish won with a big second half. That was close in the first half, and then they throttled them in the third quarter. Virginia Tech in Miami. We just talked about the Canes. Win or lose today, probably in. NC State takes on Duke at 5, and then at 7:30, it's Syracuse and Florida State. Who do you got out of the ACC over, you know, we don't have to pick today's games per se, but who do you got coming out of the ACC come Sunday?
I think I'm going to go with Notre Dame. I feel like this is the hardest one to pick because, honestly, like, you could probably tell me any of those eight teams win it, and I'd be like, okay, that makes sense. But, yeah, I think I'm going to go Notre Dame. They've been surging, it seems like, a little bit as of late. Like you said, I think won four of their last five. Virginia Tech, obviously, we don't think they're going to see Kittley, so I don't see them having enough to make a really deep run here. And then NC State's just been struggling, so I don't know. I kind of feel like it's going to be Notre Dame.
I like the Irish, too. I think they're playing better than everyone. What is the ceiling seed-wise for Notre Dame and – We'll throw NC State in there too. If either one of them were to win, what's the ceiling here?
For Notre Dame, I think as of like earlier this week, have them in that hosting group. I think the last spot in with Oklahoma falling out with that loss to Kansas, Notre Dame sneaks in. I think their ceiling is probably like a 3. I think to go from more than like a 5 to a 3 in 2 weeks time, and really like 1 week's time because they're done playing after this weekend, is probably too much. It's too much to ask, right? I think 3 is doable because I think we see the committee typically reward strong conference tournament performances with a little bit more of a jump than, you know, a couple of regular season games get you. But at the same time, I think a 3 is the ceiling. NC State, they were near the top of the 3 line. Near the top of the 3 line in the last reveal, 11th overall. I still think a 2, even if they win the whole thing, I think a 2 is the ceiling. I don't see a way where they can climb to a 1 seed right now.
Fair enough. Elizabeth Kitley, by the way, is the player of the year for the third time. Hannah Hidalgo will have to settle for freshman of the year, and that's not the only conference in which that happened to a star freshman. Do you know the other two players to win ACC player of the year 3 times? Trivia time.
Ooh. I like a shit, but
a hint, one of them no longer plays in the conference.
Oh, so it has to be someone that transferred.
No, I'm sorry, this program no longer plays in the ACC.
Oh. I'm blanking. This is too early
Alyssa
for my brain to think.
Alyssa Thomas and Elena Beard.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
So you got to go back in the Wayback Machine a little bit for Elena Beard. So we both picked Notre Dame in the ACC. Big Ten, shockingly, I think we're going to pick the same teams for a lot of these because we've only ever disagreed once. Quarterfinals today, Ohio State, Maryland, Michigan State, Nebraska, Iowa, Penn State. That should be a fun game. And Indiana, Michigan. In fact, all of these should be decent games. My pick is Ohio State. I think my love for the Buckeyes is established. I think that they're the number 2 team in the country. I don't care that they're ranked 4th in the polls. They're playing better than anyone. Sunday's loss aside, Yeah, and I just, you know, we talked to Kevin McGuff last week. Big fan of the Buckeyes, and I'll probably pick him go to the Final Four.
Yeah, I think Ohio State here as well. I know, shocker that we've got the same pick, but they've just been, I think, so much better as of the last month or two, and I think that's probably going to need to continue into this tournament. I think especially, like, Iowa, yes, you have Caitlin, but, like, the way the defense has been recently still concerns me. So, like, yes, that could be your championship game, but, like, it also wouldn't shock me if, you know, someone beats Iowa in a 95-92 game before that.
Penn State has the capability of doing that. What I think will happen is what happened a few weeks ago, where it's going to be like 111-90 in favor of Iowa. But if Iowa isn't that hot, Penn State can absolutely keep up offensively. It's just a matter of, can they get any stops defensively as opposed to zero? Can they get like 10?
Yeah. Penn State could use that win. That would help them out. I think they're very firmly on the bubble. So a win today would certainly help them.
Maryland looked bad yesterday. They were down, what, 11 after one quarter? Credit to them. They come back. They beat Illinois. It turns out to be a 10-point game. Terps, all I said 3 weeks ago, they had to do, they had to win the games they were supposed to win, and they've done that. And are they now safe at 18-12?
I think so. I think if they lost yesterday, you're probably having a conversation about do they get in or not. I think after that, pulling that off yesterday, they should be fine.
A good game. This is going to be, it can't because they're in the same conference. This is going to be like the 7-10 type teams that you're going to face in a couple of weeks, where Nebraska is going to be, or maybe an 8-9 game, where it's going to be two power teams. No one knows a whole lot about them because neither one's been ranked at any point this year. But Nebraska safely in, Michigan State safely in. So 3 o'clock Big Ten Network, good chance to, you know, if you're scoping out that early part of the bracket, you don't know a whole lot about these teams. Take a look, because, yeah, both of these teams are safely in, correct?
Yeah, those are both safely in.
Last week, I forgot to say Nebraska was going to lose, and then they did lose, so that's my bad. So, yeah, they're going to lose today to Michigan State, and then they're not going to win the Big Ten tournament. And when they do, again, I'm waiting on that T-shirt. I'm just saying. I know you're listening. I'm waiting on that T-shirt. And then Michigan, 19-12, are good record, but are they in a must-win against Indiana tonight?
I don't know that they're in a must win. I think they are probably okay at this point. It would certainly help them to win, but I think they, with the win yesterday, just the way the bubble has evolved over the last few weeks and that everyone on it has lost, they might be all right without that win.
So we both have Notre Dame in the ACC. We both have Ohio State in the Big Ten. Big 12. Second round today, the only, Kansas is on the bubble, so they play, but they're pretty safely in. West Virginia is safely in. Baylor is safely in. None of these other teams, like TCU's outright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so yeah, second round, if you skip today, that's fine. You can move on to tomorrow where the big guns will play. Texas, Oklahoma, do you have anyone else besides those two you have winning?
No, I'm going to go with Texas here. I think they're probably going to win it. But this tournament doesn't do that much for me. Not gonna lie.
Yeah, Skylar Vann, Oklahoma, Madison Booker of Texas, your co-players of the year. Actually, the only freshman to win a Player of the Year award. It's not Juju Watkins. It's not Hannah Hidalgo. It's not Michaela Williams. It's not any of these other great freshmen. It's Madison Booker of Texas, who's done a phenomenal job. I'll go with Texas, too. Like, every time I believe in Oklahoma, they go out and lose, and they're not unacceptable losses, but just every time I go like, hey, you have to give them credit. They keep winning.
Right.
It's the anti-Nebraska. All they do is lose after I credit them. So yeah, I'll pick Texas, which means Oklahoma will probably win. Big East, UConn. I have no thoughts on this, except the fact that the Big East Conference has 11 teams and a 10 player all conference first team.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, Val Ackerman, get out of here.
I noticed that yesterday and thought you would say something.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like, why not just have a first, second, and third team? Like, all these conferences that do that have like a 10 player first team and then like a 5 player second team. Like, why not just do first, second, and third? I don't understand.
The worst was SEC softball, which I go to every year. 2 years ago, last year, they had like a 22 player first team. It's like, all right, let's pump the brakes. Let's calm down. We want to honor all these people. You know, speaking of participation trophies, did you know there are now two non-NCAA tournament postseason tournaments?
Are there?
They created something called, so if you don't know, the men's NIT and the women's NIT are owned by two separate entities. So like NCAA owns the NIT and they go, oh, we want to have a women's NIT. Well, they can't name it the WNIT because that literally exists. They just don't own it. So the NCAA created the WBIT. So you have a field of 68 and then you have 32 teams and then the WNIT still exists. They just pared it down from 64 to 48. We don't need 148 teams in the postseason. Who is asking for that?
No one.
are you like, I get, you know, hey, you get 4 years, play as many games. Sure. Like no one is asking for 70 non-NCAA tournament teams.
Yeah. And I always like the, WNIT, right? Like, yes, give the teams that were like right on the bubble a chance to get in, like a chance to play in a postseason tournament. And I think that's a good experience a lot of times too, right? A lot of times the team that goes on and wins that is an NCAA tournament team the next year. But yeah, I don't think we need a third one.
I'm sure I'm old man yells at cloud because it's 2024, but yeah, I'm not going to watch. Anyways, Big East, UConn will win it. Yippee skippy. What is their ceiling? Are they stuck as a three seed?
It's hard to say. They might be. Like, they're right there with the two lines, so I think it depends. Like, is someone going to fall below them? Like, Virginia Tech probably already has. Like, I think LSU is the one that makes the jump to the three line right now. If LSU loses to someone other than South Carolina, do they flip-flop? Like, I think there's a chance they end up the two line. I don't know that it's a high chance, but there's a chance they are the last two.
Fair enough. And with the Huskies, I think it's all about geography more so.
Right, yeah. I don't think they really care.
As opposed to Portland.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they could care less if they're a two or a three and would more care about being in Albany and then particularly being in Albany, not in South Carolina's region.
Right. If you're going to ask them, which the having multiple Big Ten, multiple Pac-12 teams doesn't make it a true snake, but yeah, mm-hmm. as long as they can goal one, probably avoid South Carolina. Goal two, make that Albany.
Right.
Get to Albany three by any means necessary. Pac-12, Cameron Brink, your player of the year, the defensive player of the year. I understand Juju Watkins is the, you know, she's the new flavor in town. She's the star freshman. She's probably going to win it each of the, well, she won't win it the next 3 years because RIP Pac-12. but she'll probably be the favorite in the Big Ten for as long as she's in college. And Cameron Brink's been there, you know, she's been there now 4 years. I don't think it was a choice. It's Cameron Brink. She's the second best.
Yeah,
player.
I didn't really understand all the discourse around this that, like, Juju should have won it because, like, I feel like people have just overlooked what Cameron Brink has done this season, if you're going to say that. She's been incredibly efficient. Her defensive
Like most efficient season in, like, 20 years.
Right, yeah. Like, it's just she's having a historic season. And if Caitlin Clark wasn't here, she would have won National Player of the Year. Like, there's really no debate in my head over who should have won Pac-12 Player of the Year.
Nah, I'm with you. However, I don't think Stanford will win the Pac-12 tournament. Who do you think?
UCLA. Riding with the Bruins. They get the win over Utah last night. They've got USC today. So that should be fun. The Pac-12, like, because it's so good this year, like, even like yesterday, every single game was so good. It's very exciting. It's really also very sad when you think about it being the last year.
But however, yeah,
I'm riding
I'm not,
with the Bruins.
I'm not sad that I'm never going to have to complain that the Pac-12, these games are on the Pac-12 network. Like, if ESPN put these games at a certain time, it's like, all right, you're beholden to the mother lord.
Mm-hmm.
Why on earth is a UCLA-USC game tipping off at 10:30? No one's going to watch that.
Yeah, like, well, I will, but...
well, yeah, but the point is, the point is, like, this is partly why the Pac-12 is dying in a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You own the network. You can put it whatever time you wanted to. Make the first game at 6 Eastern, make the second one at 8:30, and just
yeah,
can't.
Agreed.
Can't. Anyways, the other one is Oregon State Stanford. seems weird that the Pac-12 might only get six teams in, and all six teams, well, I guess Utah might not be ranked next week, but yeah, it seems wrong. It seems like the Pac-12 should get probably seven, but this, again, the top six did so much damage against the bottom six, it might be hard to justify. Utah, I know they lost yesterday. Our weekly question of what on earth do you make of the Utes, because they no-showed against Washington State last week and then lost by double digits last night to UCLA. And I mean, obviously they're a tournament team, but like if it's ever going to show up,
time. Yeah, exactly. Like, well, they're up and down, up and down. It's so hard to say what to make of this team. Obviously Pili is fantastic, and like if you haven't played against her, like that's probably gonna be enough to get them a win, maybe two win, loss, probably a win. Well, they might be playing in like a 7-10 type game at this point, so I think it'll get them a win in the tournament. Beyond that, I think you said this last week, but like if they were in the Elite Eight, wouldn't be shocked. They lose in the first or second round, also wouldn't be shocked. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that team.
Slight correction. They lost to Washington, not Washington State. They get all butter when you confuse the two, which, you know, well, I would have picked UCLA, but we can't go 5 for 5. So I'll pick Stanford, even though I think UCLA is the best team. And then lastly, I mean, I won't pick it. SEC. I bet you know who the favorite here is in Greenville.
Yeah.
Who do you got to win?
I'm hard pressed to see someone from South Carolina winning this tournament.
However, yesterday, a big day for the bubble. I texted you yesterday morning because Texas A&M, Mississippi State, Auburn, Vanderbilt, all four teams played. All four, either in some capacity, they're flirting with, you know, trying to stay out of the last four in. They're trying to stay in the first four in, or they're trying to sneak in. So Texas A&M beats Mississippi State. Auburn wins. Vanderbilt loses. You can go however you want to take it. What does it mean for those four teams who are all right there? If they might be Team 67, they might be Team 69.
Yeah, I think for Mississippi State, they're probably moving into the last four in territory because they've just been on this like horrible downward spiral for the last
6 of 7, and the win was Missouri, who finished in dead blast in the SEC.
So yeah, not good for them. Like they're, I'd say, a team that's definitely in that kind of like at risk group right now of like bid stealers and things like that, knocking them out of the field. So yeah, rough for them. Texas A&M, like, yes, good that you got the loss. They've also been on one of these downward spirals. I don't know. I don't know that it moves them in yet. I think it's going to depend on some of these other teams that are kind of in that group of last four. And like when you put their resume in, like, for example, Vanderbilt, who lost to Florida yesterday, like you put those resumes side by side, I still think I'd go Vanderbilt in over Texas A&M. So I don't know that they're quite moving into the field. I think Auburn getting the win was good for them. That LSU win is certainly helping them stay in. So, and they've got another chance, obviously, to win today. But even if they lose today, I feel pretty good about Auburn staying in. Vanderbilt is such a hard case to me because it's like, how often do you see a 22-win power conference team not make the field? And yeah, they didn't really play anyone, but I think you start putting their resume side by side with a lot of people. They're over 500 in the SEC. I think they probably sneak in. They're probably in the play-in round, but I think they sneak in.
If you're looking at the net rankings, Auburn is 41st. A&M is 42nd. Vanderbilt, you got to go down to 57th after a loss to Florida. And then who's the other team? Mississippi State. I think their net is higher. Yeah. No, 47th. So three of those teams are in the mid-40s. And then Vanderbilt, which, you know, has the most wins, but again, not the best quality wins, all the way down to 57. So yeah, the SEC in that regard is fascinating. Today, Texas A&M, best of luck against South Carolina. Tune in at noon Eastern. It's going to be a great game on the SEC Radio Network on SiriusXM Varsity Network app. Rob Joyce in the call. 2:30 Tennessee, Alabama. That should be a fun one. Two teams that finished tied for fourth in the conference. Bama won convincingly a couple weeks back, and Kelly Harper yesterday said that was a turning point for the Lady Vols, and they've played well since. Lady, if looking ahead, if now big if, because they have to beat Alabama today, Tennessee's played South Carolina tough twice, including on Sunday. And this is a team, I said it last week, where are they, like 8-9 seed range?
Yeah, right in there. Yep. Comfortably in.
I don't
want to see them.
No.
It's my 8-9 if I'm a one
seed. Absolutely not. Because the odds are you may have the best player on the floor. You may not, you know, depending on what mm-hmm. team it is. Rekia Jackson is going to be one of the two best players on the floor. And that's always a dangerous thing to start with. And then they have size. It's not the most efficient size all the time. Like Julian Hollingshead battled foul trouble yesterday, but you can't teach size if you don't have it. Mm-hmm. Speaking of giving a team fits, Auburn and LSU round three today at 6:00. That should be fun. Of course, the Tigers won. Well, Auburn won at home and then gave LSU fits at the Pete a few weeks back. So that one should be fun. And then Florida and Ole Miss tonight. Gators, the 11 seed in the quarterfinals. Ole Miss, again, a team that if you're looking for, you know, someone, if you're trying to watch someone that you haven't seen a whole lot this year, Ole Miss hasn't been ranked most of the year. They've never not been in the field. They're a classic. Like, they're going to be in the 8-9 game again or the 7-10 game. So a chance to see a tournament team that you may not watch a whole lot this year. So, yeah, intrigue all around today, I think, in Greenville.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Again, tune in. Wall-to-wall coverage. I'll be on. Actually, I have tonight off. It's going to be great. after I was there for 13 hours yesterday at Bonsecours Wellness Arena. We'll be there all day today. We'll be there all day tomorrow. And we'll drive home Sunday. Megan, how much basketball are you going to watch? Well, you watched a lot yesterday. How much are you going to watch today? How much are you going to watch this weekend? Because then, I mean, to be honest, you get a week off for the most part. Like, sure.
Yeah.
There are some smaller conferences, but, oh, that's right. You're going to Uncasville tomorrow.
Not tomorrow. Not until Sunday. I'm skipping tomorrow. Too much to watch to sit in Uncasville all day tomorrow for a lot of teams. And unfortunately, will not be in the NCAA tournament. So yeah, skipping Uncasville tomorrow, but going to be watching a lot of best ball tonight.
You got multiple screens going? Like, what's the setup?
Yeah. I'm at my boyfriend's, but we are going to Best Buy later because there's only one TV here. And I was like, this isn't going to cut it. But yeah, lots of basketball tonight, lots of basketball tomorrow, and then I'll be in Uncasville Sunday, Monday for the Big East, obviously. Big East and Big 12, I think, are the only things still playing by the time we get to Monday.
Making your boyfriend go to Best Buy to buy a TV. I mean, you have a computer too.
Yeah.
You got a tablet?
To be fair, he said he wanted another one for the other room. So I'm not forcing him. Just saying we should do it now. Exactly.
Megan, when's the next bracketology update? Mind you, the last one, 12:57 in the morning the other day. Let's go. Are you going to do this during like human hours? When's the next update coming?
Yeah, either tonight or tomorrow morning, another update, and then probably another inhuman hour on Sunday night. And then we'll get another one after both Big East and Big 12 finish up. And then keep filling in the auto qualifiers. I think once the Big East and the Big 12 finish up, I want to say like some of the other leagues that have auto bids are kind of this weekend. It's really the Ivy that's going to be the one that's trailing on the teams that are in auto bid conversation.
All right. Well, Megan, enjoy the week.
They're not auto bid. At large bids. That's the wrong word. Yeah. That's
next week. We'll have to get a guess next week because we'll recap everything from this weekend and maybe we'll talk about some of these. You know, we'll have a pretty finalized list of, all right, resumes are complete, who's in, who's out, and we'll have fun. So, Megan, enjoy your multiple TV screen watching basketball. How big a TV are we going?
I don't know. That's not going to be my decision. There is like a 70-inch here, so I've got one big screen.
Sounds like an 88-inch is coming. All right. Megan, enjoy the basketball. We'll talk next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.